The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Welcome back. Second hour live. A busy first hour. The number of guests, and we're not stopping here. Adam Rittenberg will be joining us in just a moment. The college football writer for ESPN. He's got a look at power rankings, and we're going to have Adam explain in just a minute what this is all about. Adam, great to have you on. Thank you. A lot of topics, obviously, to talk to you about. Let's start with looking ahead a little bit. Explain the list. How I don't want to put it on you, but how it was. How did you get to this point?
Right, Paul. So this is a series we do every offseason. There's four parts. We do one for quarterbacks, offense, defense, and then a total team ranking. The one that came out earlier today was on the defenses, and it's a three-year projection. So it's not just how good will this defense be in 2022, but how good they'll likely be in 23 and 24. So it's based on who's on the roster now, who's coming in from a recruiting standpoint, what coaching changes have been made or have kind of just kept in place. And so it's a projection. And the defense ones, the one that came out today is one of my favorites because you have some familiar names. It seems like Clemson and Georgia are jockeying for that top spot every year. But you also have some unfamiliar names or teams that you don't hear as much from a national standpoint, a little bit more Big Ten West in there, some Mountain West teams, Group of Five, also because they've done a heck of a job defensively. I mean, that's really how Luke Fickell has built Cincinnati into what they were. And while Georgia justifiably got all the attention for what it did in the draft from the defensive perspective, Cincinnati also put six players in the NFL draft, and that's why the Bearcats defense appears fairly high on this list of the future power rankings.
And in reading into it, and sometimes it's difficult to read into power rankings, but what do you take away from this list?
Well, you start at the top, and certainly, I could have gone with Georgia. They obviously lost a lot to the draft, but they've done such a good job under Kirby Smart of having, they lose great players. They have guys ready to step in. They go 2-3 deep at certain positions. They're always going to be stout on the defensive line. But I thought Clemson had just a slight edge as far as their projection. And it's interesting because, everyone thought Clemson had this horrible season last year, and they were certainly not at their standard on offense. But you look at what they have coming back defensively for this year and for the future, even though they do lose a longtime coordinator, Brent Venables, to Oklahoma, I think Clemson projects really, really well. And then Texas A&M is number three on my list, Paul. They moved up significantly from the 2020 rankings to the 2021 rankings. They only moved up one spot this year from 4 to 3, but it just shows what Jimbo Fisher and his staff have compiled from a defensive standpoint. They had arguably the best defensive recruiting class that we've seen, at least up front, in recent memory. And then Alabama sitting there at number 4 with what they have coming back, Will Anderson and others, but also how they've recruited. Then you get into some Midwest flavor with Wisconsin, Notre Dame, Iowa, and a few others. But that top 5, certainly some debate there. It was hard to put that together.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the issues going on right now in college athletics. And Adam, this is conference meeting season. Everyone is taking their shot, but it sounds like a lot of people complaining, but what is getting done? What really has happened other than a lot of words in relation to NIL and the transfer portal?
Right, Paul. Well, there's certainly a lot of conversation around NIL, but as far as actions, other than lobbying federal lawmakers, which Greg Sankey and George Kliavkoff did not too long ago, there's not a whole lot that can be done. The NCAA put out those guidelines or reiterating the guidelines about booster involvement and the collectives, but I think a lot of people around the sport, you and I probably included, have a healthy dose of skepticism about whether that can actually be enforced. The transfer portal is a little bit different. It's more under the control of college football, and I think some of the proposals that came out from the American Football Coaches Association Association, you know, do have some real merit and could be pushed through relatively soon regarding the, you know, taking away the 25 initial counters and just allowing teams to get to their 85 scholarships, however it goes, and then certainly putting in some transfer windows, one in the late fall, early winter, one in the late spring after spring ball going into May. I think that could provide some level of control and could it really benefit a lot of people around the sport. So I think the transfer portal is controllable. NIL, I don't think it's really under any control right now. But the biggest thing that I took away, Paul, from being at least the meetings out in Arizona, Big Ten, Pac-12, Big 12, Mountain West, is that I think we're closer and closer to the Power Five, at least, if not all the FBS, breaking away and self-governing in a different way, not being under this NCAA umbrella in terms of making rules, making policies. There's a real level of frustration and a motivation to do something differently.
That's a great headline, Adam, and I think there's a lot of merit to what you're saying, but we have spent years talking about how long it's going to take this league to incorporate this school. Mainly we're talking to SEC and OU in Texas, the CFP conversation. I mean, every time guys like us say, hey, you know, when is it going to expand? You get a guy like Bill Hancock, so we haven't even picked the site selection for 4 years from now. Like the two of us care, you know, where that game is other than when we have to make our airline reservation. So why are we to believe that even if all this happens, it's going to be anytime soon?
Yeah, it's a very fair point. Nothing moves quickly in college athletics, but I do sense that there's a real frustration and motivation among the top people in the sport, meaning commissioners, athletic directors at the top Power Five institutions. Dean Smith spoke about it recently, the Ohio State athletic director. Greg Sankey has expressed frustration with the NCAA. You know, George Kliavkov, at least coming in from the outside as a Pac-12 commissioner, doesn't really understand why college athletics works the way it does in terms of why do these groups of schools that are making all this money through revenue, through who they are, their big stadiums, why are they letting schools that are completely different, that don't look like them, that don't resemble them at all, have any say in policy making? And so, yeah, I don't know when we'll get to that breakaway, but I do sense that there's a real desire to do it quickly because people are tired of waiting so long to enact changes, to bring in new rules, to have a policy. And I think that is going to lead to at least some important discussions here at these league meetings, at the athletic directors' conventions, which come up in May and certainly in June. And then we'll see where that goes from there, because I just don't, they don't want to be, they don't want to take so long for anything to happen as far as rule changes and policy changes.
With Adam Rotenberg. Adam, okay, I hear you loud and clear, but let's just make sure the audience understands a couple of things. The college football playoff is, there's maybe some oversight from the NCAA, but for the most part, it's a separate entity. Conferences with television networks, separate entity. So what about the NCAA per se is frustrating those in the college football space? I'm not talking basketball, but college football.
Well, I just think in terms of the oversight committee, the rules, some of the way how long it takes to implement, you know, a different policy towards player safety or just something in that realm. I think the revenue component is important because you're right. The revenues are different from league to league. We're looking at two leagues, the Big Ten and the SEC, having a lot more money than everybody else. But there also is a pretty big revenue gap, current and even projected, after the Power Five. And so I don't know what it is. I mean, I know Gene Smith mentioned the college football playoff as sort of a way to self-govern. I don't know if the college football playoff is capable of doing that or whether it would be something completely different.
The same people who are talking about change could not sit in a room last year and this year and figure something out about the most important thing in college football, and that's the expansion of the playoff. So why am I to believe any of these guys are going to back their word up in talking about where you are? I mean, they're not credible when it comes to change other than to mouth a bunch of words.
Well, and you could even bring that argument to NIL. I mean, if you're really looking ahead, why weren't they able to agree on some type of NIL policy that could work for everyone? You know, who's looking out for the greater good? And you know, the playoff conversation, I know, was frustrating. I think all you have to do, though, is look at some of these upcoming media deals, and once that those are done, there really won't be much excuse left for those who maybe were hesitant about expanding the college football playoff. Got the Big Ten coming up, Pac-12, Big 12. I think at that point, you were going to move forward at some type of college playoff expansion. But even in this idea of wanting to break away, is there enough consensus building? Are these leagues in a position to come together on these important topics, or to defer to somebody or somebody's group of people that can govern? Because we've talked about it for years. Can there be a commissioner of college football? Some people say it would be great, but it's a hard time implementing it or coming up with possible candidates. So it's a sport that's very hard or resistant to come together. But maybe with NIL being such an urgent issue, and it seems like complaints are coming from all corners of the sport, maybe that's the thing that gets some of these folks over the line in terms of, we've got to do something together to move forward, or we're going to have many more problems in the future.
Well, we saw how collaborative they all are when the commissioner of the ACC went rogue, along with Kevin Warren and Kliakoff last summer, and formed their own alliance within the Power Five. So, I mean, I know, I realize you're the messenger. Please don't misunderstand me, Adam. But I just don't believe these people when they talk about change. And to me, it's just something to say at the spring meetings to show that they're concerned and care. Gene Smith, good for him, but he's part of the Big Ten, which essentially broke away from the rest of the Power Five with that alliance move last summer, which I've yet to understand other than spite. So, you know, tell all these guys they can keep talking, but you know, let us also know, Adam, please, when we should start believing them.
That's a very fair point. Again, this sport does not react well to change, especially something that's surprising. And other than a few people in the SEC and at Texas and Oklahoma, there wasn't a whole lot of real chatter about what happened. Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC, that rattled college sports. It led to the alliance, and in part, it's led to some of these other issues that haven't been decided. The lack of expansion in the college football playoff, and so your sentiment is a fair one, and the skepticism is also fair to have until we see some type of change. But I guess I wouldn't get too caught up in the playoff issue. I think the bigger mistake was not coming up with something that worked for at least the power schools regarding NIL. That was such a failure, and now we're seeing the result of that. The playoff will get sorted out. It's frustrating. I wanted to see an expanded playoff. We're going to get there. NIL, the failure there to not come up with something that worked for most or all of college athletics at the highest level was a massive failure, and now you're seeing the result of it.
And Adam, your point is a good one, a great one. All these leaders in college sports, they all just look the other way. And I would be the last person on the face of the earth to defend Mark Emmert, but it's not all his fault. He's the one that caught all the blame. It was easy for these leaders to pile on him as if he was the single reason why college athletics is the mess it's in today. But the Gene Smiths, the Kliakoff, he wasn't around, but all these other guys have been around for some time.
Yeah, and again, I think sometimes we criticize the NCAA not realizing that the members are the NCAA. It's all in the same. And the inability to kind of come together and be forward-thinking. You know, you and I talked over years about Mike Slive being a forward thinker. Greg Sankey's the same way. Jim Delaney was that way for a long time, thinking what's going to come next. And I think there's a lack of that in some level right now, or at least those who have that ability are not getting enough support. We need to get ahead of this next thing instead of always reacting to something that happened. Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC, for example, it's too much of a reactionary enterprise. And then at the top, you know, Mark Emmert kept getting contracts because he did his job for his bosses, which are a group of university presidents who hired him. So in that sense, he was successful. If not, he would have been fired. And so I think it's really important whoever replaces him is somebody who can connect better with those who I think are more important going forward, the Greg Sankeys of the world, the other commissioners of the Power Five, the top athletic directors. Otherwise, we're just going to keep spinning our wheels. You and I are going to have the same conversations, and you're going to express those same sentiments that are very fair, and that frustration will be held by many who love college athletics.
Great conversation with Adam Rittenberg. Adam, many, many thanks. We started off talking about what's happening on the field, and we lost sight of that because of all the mess that's going on off the field. Come back soon. Really appreciate your time. We are rushing to a break because we went a little bit long there, but your phone call is right around the corner.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And welcome back. What a busy show it's been. Let's try to catch up with some phone calls. And Joe is in Houston. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Paul.
Hi there.
Good show as usual.
Thank you.
Listen, Paul, I'm going to go against the grain a little bit here. As much as I enjoy the entertainment of legend, I should say that I have a lot of respect for Saban because he's done it on the field. And but I don't have a whole lot of respect for legend and his loudmouth. And, you know, for him to go around the room and pick on the different coaches in the SEC, I think that's kind of ridiculous. Saban's had a good run. You know, the Bible says that God resists the proud, and he doesn't have a whole lot of use for the pride and the arrogance. And I hope Legend, for his own sake, I hope he learns that lesson. I got a feeling he will up the road. You know, we've had a lot of people in the sports arena who have had good runs, some real good runs in the pros and in the collegiate level, but I just don't think Legend's he's riding along on the back of Saban, and Saban's been a pretty good horse for so long. But I got a lot more respect for Saban than I do for Legend. And I will say I think you guys have missed the mark on Texas. I don't think you get it yet. When you go to downtown Austin and step in a pile of feces and a couple of syringes, you'll find out that Texas is not the same Texas that it was 10 years ago, even 5 years ago.
What do you mean by that, Jim?
Well, I think I made it clear. People that don't want to walk around downtown Austin because they don't want to step in feces and syringes.
What does that mean? I'm sure you can go someplace in Austin without stepping.
No. It's the San Francisco of the East.
Oh, I get it.
And people living in Austin realize it, and they see where it's going. And I can tell you, the governor of the state of Texas realizes where it's going. People not wanting to fund the police. You know, how stupid you got to be walking down that path. So I think you need to talk to some current people in Austin.
That statement rings pretty loudly. I'm not aware of some of the criticism of Austin, but I didn't realize it was that bad.
Yes, it is that bad. That ain't coming from me. That's coming from people that I know that live over there,
right,
who've been over there. So it'd be easy for.
Well, maybe that's why all those Texans wear boots, so you don't step in it in Jordans.
Well, the kind of boots they wear over there, they don't want to get them dirty.
Oh, okay. Well, I've got some learning to do about downtown Austin.
Hey, listen, I'm on the show on TV, and I'm talking to you, and I'm surprised there's a guy with glasses doing all the talking on the television. How does this work?
That guy with glasses ought to shut up.
Well, what can I do? I can't see your show. I'm seeing a guy on your show, and I can't remember the name of the guest you said was going
to
come.
Let me, it may take a second to get to your screen because I'm watching. I've got two different monitors here. So right now, Joe, what's over the left? Let's see, the right shoulder of that guy with glasses.
USC. USC Trojans is sitting on his right shoulder.
You know what, Joe? You're on the wrong channel because can you tell me what channel you're on?
I think I'm on 611. Let me see. 611.
I'll tell you what's going on.
2 p.m. to 6 p.m.
Joe, you're watching a delayed feed. I don't know what network what provider you have, but whatever you have is about 5 minutes behind what is currently going out live. So I'm sorry, but you, in about 5 minutes, while the rest of us are moving on, you'll be seeing your phone call. Well, how does that work, Randy? You're a TV. You're, I mean, there's no way it could be 4 minutes behind, could it?
No, it's not that far behind.
He might be watching it on some.
Or he could be streaming.
Yeah, I think he. I think he could be streaming, and I think he's streaming illegally too.
Whoa.
Chris is up next in Montgomery. Hello, Chris.
Yes, sir. It's great to talk to you.
Thank you, Chris.
Actually, I thought it was on the left shoulder.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're right. It is it's over my right shoulder, but your left shoulder.
Yes, sir. It's great to talk to you, but
you would think somebody
I was going to tell you about my dad, if you don't mind, sir.
No, please.
My dad put me on you know, before you even came on television. And, you know, I used to joke about you, and I was like, why are you listening to this guy? And then I started listening. And I was like, wow, I'm the dumb guy.
So your dad was listening to us before on the radio before we went on TV?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I also wanted to say my brother, my sister, and my dad are huge Georgia fans, and I'm the only Alabama fan.
Now, do they all, you're calling from Montgomery, do they live there as well or somewhere else?
Yes, they do live here, but my dad was born in Columbus, Georgia.
And what a lot of people don't realize, now Montgomery's, maybe an hour and a half from the Georgia border, but as you go east, you're knocking up against that Georgia border Alabama and Georgia border for hundreds of miles.
Yes, sir. Yeah, it was quite a scene here, in January.
I bet it was. Well, Chris, first of all, I am really glad to hear about your dad and your turning you on to us. And I thank you. Please thank him for all of us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Mr.
Great
Rambo.
To have you on. And by the way, the guy in Houston,
yeah.
he's now seeing himself. Well, we're going to a break. We're getting away from that guy because you know what? I'm not going to Austin if I'm stepping in feces and syringes.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Our next guest, Alex Kirshner, has had, like many in the industry, a lot to say. Alex tweeted, "We'll join the dunk tank on Saban for a second, because in Nick's corner of CFB, there has never been parity, of course, but there are parts of college football that have a lot of it. And we could do better to point out that there's more to life than the CFP." Alex Kirshner has a very popular podcast he co-hosts called Split Zone. He's also written for some of the leading political publications and websites in the country. Alex, great to have you back on the program. It's been a while. How are you? And we appreciate you being here.
Oh, I'm doing great. Anytime you get an email in the afternoon that Paul wants to talk to you later that day, it's one of the more exciting parts of the day. So thanks for having me.
Well, thank you. Certainly you have a big following across the country on many different topics, but especially college football. So why don't we start with Nick Saban's comments, which I think were tailor-made for a dull day on Twitter, where people went into complete and total meltdown. You were one of the few that just didn't buy the whole thing. What did you make out of it? And then we can talk more about where we are in college football.
Well, I think the thing that probably made a lot of people think twice when Nick Saban says we want to get parity back in college football is that Alabama has been the chief example for a while now, in this era and in a previous era with Bear Bryant, of there just not being parity really ever in college football. And that's the thing that I think predates either Alabama dynasty and certainly courses back to the history of the sport. But, you could go back as far as the 1860s and, you know, you've got Princeton and Yale and Harvard kind of had a timeshare for a while at the very top of the sport. And decade by decade, you know, you'd see your Notre Dames, your Armies at different points, your Oklahomas, your USC's, Texas in the 60s and 70s, Miami, Florida State, Florida in the 80s. I mean, every decade has these defining teams where when you go into really any given season, I think we all understand at this point that there's not more than three or five teams that really have any significant chance to be the last one standing in an event like the playoff or the BCS before it. So when Nick Saban said, "I hope we get back to parity," the thing that I was wondering about was, you know, back to when? When at the very top of the sport did that exist? And I think the answer is pretty much never. I'm just one person.
Alex, let me broaden the conversation to where we currently are. This bizarre space where coaches are accusing everyone else of tampering, cheating, but nobody really seems to care. The NCAA and college leaders put up a good front the other day, and they're going to double down on this NIL, but it sounds very much the police commissioner in Casablanca when he was accused of gambling in the Rick's casino. I mean, everybody knows what's going on, but nobody's going to do anything about it. So does it really matter to the fans that schools are pretty blatantly buying players right now?
I think that some fans care more than others, and I don't even know that the divide is fan base by fan base. I think some of it might be generational. You know, I completely understand why, if you've been watching college football and loving this sport since your parents were taking you to games when you were a little kid, and maybe that was a long time ago and you're older now, if the sheen of professionalism or whatever it would be called might be uncomfortable. I certainly get why it's a little disorienting. But on another hand, I think if you are part of a newer generation of college football fans, you're newer to the sport, you might just look at this economic model and think, well, like, this thing's pretty damn weird in the first place. I'm not sure, how they even got away with this economic system for so long. So then your response to, the transfer portal and the guise of name, image, and likeness being used as pay-for-play might just be, well, okay, that's inevitable. I mean, of course that was going to happen, and it's, in a way, it's the just outcome. So it's not comfortable for a lot of people, and I think that we are due for a couple more years of sort of a mess in college football while this gets figured out. But in a lot of ways, it was a long time coming.
Alex Kirshner with us. Alex, I know you write a lot about politics. And it seems to me that sometimes it's hard to distinguish between college football and politics because the tribalism exists. It's my way or it's my team wins, but versus the destruction of yours. As somebody who spends a lot of time in D.C. but also pays homage to college football on your podcast, how would you describe the intersection between the two?
Yeah, I think they're inextricable, and I know that there's a loud segment of people who will say, I don't want politics with my sports, but I mean, that's like taking out about 70% of why college football is the way that it is. So it's really difficult to separate the two and pretend that one lives in its own world independent of the other. I think it has been kind of, interesting to see the last few years. The politicians have gotten more interested in college football, and it's been one of the few bipartisan causes in various state legislatures and in governor's mansions across the country. In a Supreme Court case last year, you got Clarence Thomas and Brett Kavanaugh to agree with Sonia Sotomayor. So I think there's a lot of interest and a lot of interest in the sport and a lot of skepticism about the way that it's operated. But also at the same time, there's been a lot of deference shown over the years by a lot of these same politicians that have kind of contributed to the sport being set up the way that it is. And if you look at specific states, LSU is a great example, going all the way back to Huey Long in particular, decades ago at this point. LSU football ain't what it is if you don't have the governor of Louisiana really throwing his weight around to try to make that the proud kind of flagship program of the state. So politicians have always been extremely involved in making college football what it is.
And I will tell you, Alex, and I can't remember what year it was, may have been 2012, there was a guy running for governor of Alabama on the Republican side, and he made some flippant comment about Nick Saban, which sounded like he was upset that Nick Saban, his father had played at Auburn, and he was an Auburn guy. And I ended up writing an article about it, and I've had political people tell me it cost him perhaps winning the governorship because the blowback was so bad that he barely missed in the primary. So people do pay attention to that, and I mentioned Alabama because now there's the former Auburn coach in the Senate from Alabama, and the former Heisman Trophy winner Herschel Walker is running in Georgia.
Sure is. Yeah, I guess there's a lot of political cachet in being a college football hero. It's something that I think has a decades old history at least. There were many an effort in the day to draft Bear Bryant to hold various offices, I think, in both Alabama and Arkansas. Turned out Bear could make a lot of money just doing other things and didn't need to go into politics for it. But it is something. I think in some cases you see that people take the life lessons that they learned in football and apply them for good in politics, and in other cases, for bad. And I think recently we've seen quite a bit of the latter.
Alex, I asked Saban about that once, and he laughed. He scoffed at me, but I think he would be sure to be elected for a couple of reasons. Number one, every Auburn fan in the state would vote for him to get him out of Alabama. I just don't know if he'd get the Alabama people's support. But anyway, we really appreciate your time. And, of course, big fans of your podcast. You come back soon. We really appreciate it, Alex.
Thanks, Paul. Always a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Alex Kirshner. And by the way, there is some this is not terrible news from a real live situation, but it is terrible news if you're an Alabama fan and are planning on going to one of the biggest games of the year, at least from a perception standpoint. I believe it's September 10th. Alabama is playing at Texas. You've heard of that by now. There was a hope that the game would be in prime time on ABC. Primetime games from Austin are really cool. Well, guess what? Fox is holding its big upfront meeting right now in New York, where all the sponsors gather, and they are delivering some of their bigger stories of the year. And they just announced, Fox Sports Company just announced that they have the rights to the Alabama-Texas game, and it will be shown on Fox. And more, this is not confirmed yet, but usually they have their biggest games, they call it the Big Noon, which means if that holds up, and I think it will. Let me make sure if I've got the time on this. I'm double checking to see if they've listed. They have not listed the time yet, but it's almost certain to be an 11 a.m. local time, a local start in Austin. Now, Brams, you're in my ear right now. How long did you live in Austin? 7 years. So on September 10th at 11 o'clock, what are we talking about from a temperature and a humidity standpoint? Yeah. How about you will lose a lot of weight if at this game? I mean, 90 degrees and as much humidity as they can squeeze into the stadium. Anyway, what a bad break. And this has nothing to do with the networks. It's just what a terrible time that's going to be for Alabama fans. Tremendous advantage, though, for Alabama, I think, because the stadium will be as dead as you can get at that time of the day. We'll come right back with much more.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we're back in Jim. We're back here, and Jim is in Indiana. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Paul.
Hi there.
How are you?
Jim, I am doing wonderfully. Thank you.
Yes. The reason I called is over the years, I have learned an appreciation for Alabama's coach, Nick Saban, and I see a lot of parallels in the way he coaches and the coach from Bloomington, Indiana, named Bob Knight. Now, Bob got victim of circumstance, I believe, even though he was still winning, still graduating players, still competitive, and had a heart for all of his kids, but yet there was discontent at Assembly Hall. And you could hear it rumbling for years, even before the transfers. Now, what is the difference today in college football and college basketball, which in basketball they do not allow the coaching style of Bob Knight?
Jim, allow me to jump in for 1 second.
Please do.
I think Bob Knight was someone who had serious personality disorders and, you know, could not control his emotions. I think Nick Saban can. Nick Saban's a fiery coach, and, you know, they both were at the top of their profession. You know, Knight won 3 national championships, Saban has won 7. But
and a perfect season, and NCAA.
You cannot dispute the first half of Bob Knight's career would be put up against anyone that's ever coached in the game. But,
well, even the second half, he was still making NCAA tournament and Calipari.
Listen, he became a much less important factor in the second half of his career. But
we still kicked the butt out of the Fab Five.
Well, I'm not going to argue. Facts are facts. The second half of his career was pretty dismal compared to the first half. But my point being, Bob Knight was just a terrible person. And I say that as somebody who dealt with him a few times. Nick Saban has been able to get beyond that. He doesn't, there are a lot of criticism. There's always been criticisms of Saban. But it doesn't compare to Bob Knight. Bob Knight was a man who was completely out of control, and he ended up destroying himself and his career because of his temper. Saban has been able to manage his to the greater good. Hey, thank you very much for your call. We appreciate it. We are 2 hours in right now, and we've had a pretty interesting program. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. We have a couple more guests. We look forward to getting to them, but we are coming right back.